One of the unique features of this Krishna conscious movement is that we have this disciplic succession. In fact, not just a disciplic succession, but one that is intact for over 5,000 years and originating from Lord Krishna himself. So we know how Lord Krishna first gave this knowledge to Lord Brahma, the first created living entity in this universe, as he sat on the lotus flower and performed penance and meditation. And then Krishna revealed knowledge within the heart of Lord Brahma. Then Lord Brahma gave this knowledge to his son, Narada Muni. Narada Muni, in turn, to his disciple Vyasadeva, who is the compiler and the writer of all of the Vedas. Then on down through the years, about 1,000 years ago, to Madhvacharya. And then 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his followers, the six Goswamis, and so many others. On down to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the 19th century, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, the spiritual master of our spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and then continuing through his disciples. So this is a very wonderful disciplic succession, and this is the path. This is the way by which spiritual knowledge is transmitted. It has to be received from a bona fide spiritual master. It's not enough to just hear spiritual knowledge, or one might just think of, oh, I'm feeling very spiritual or having some insight or realization. That's all very good. But real knowledge must be that knowledge which comes from the previous acharyas, who are the self-realized saints and sages, the spiritual masters, who come down through hundreds and hundreds of years. So our faith in the scriptures, our faith in following the practices of bhakti yoga, are not only based upon the faith in our spiritual master, which of course is there, but also the faith in the entire disciplic succession that these words are coming back from God himself, from Krishna, thousands and thousands of years ago. So this process of knowledge is called the descending process of spiritual knowledge. So there are different processes of knowledge. In philosophy, this is called epistemology, or theories of knowledge. In the Sanskrit word we use is praman. Praman means ways of valid knowing. What are the ways that you understand something or know something? How do we know what is true? It's called a praman. And they're basically, sometimes I've seen four, but three basic methods of knowledge, of understanding. One is what's called in philosophy the inductive process. In Sanskrit, it's called anuman, which means logic. Logic by logical analysis, trying to understand the truth. Of course, we all know that there's certain limitations to that. You know, I remember when I was on the debate team, we would, back in high school, one would pick one side, one pick another, and we'd have all these arguments, you know, against this and this point and that point and that point. It didn't really matter what was true, it was just a matter of what you could argue logically against. You know, you could take either side, didn't matter. So that's not really the way to, in a way to find truth. Then there's deductive knowledge, or called pratyaksha, which is direct perception. And if we expand direct perception a little bit, we also, what would be included within this is what we call the scientific method or experimental knowledge. And this is, of course, a way to understand a certain amount of knowledge. Certain truths can be derived, certain knowledge is derived from empiric knowledge through sense perception. But of course, that's also limited. Because basically we're looking at the material elements, we're looking at those things which our five senses and our mind can see and comprehend, and anything that's beyond that is really outside of this realm of deductive knowledge or direct perception. And we know that the living entity, as the scriptures state, is subject to mistakes, imperfect senses, the tendency to cheat, and to be an illusion. So therefore, another limited way of acquiring knowledge. But the third way of knowing is called shabda praman, or through sound vibration, through hearing from authority, hearing descending knowledge, as we were talking about, coming down into disciplic succession. And this is considered to be the highest knowledge. Because not only because it's coming from God is it absolute, but it's also on a much higher level. Instead of just understanding things about the material world, one understands not only those things of the material world, but even more importantly, those things from the spiritual world. The nature of the spiritual world, the truths of the spiritual world are coming down from Krishna through the saints and sages and gurus to us in a way that we can gain real knowledge, spiritual knowledge of who we are, what is our relationship with God, and what is the purpose of life. So therefore, we accept spiritual knowledge in this way. And the way that we will receive this downline of spiritual knowledge is through the spiritual master. And that's the role. Krishna, of course, gives us knowledge. He speaks directly in Bhagavad Gita. He, you know, so many scriptures are there, but Krishna wants us to learn from the guru. This is Krishna's program. This is Krishna's plan. He set it up in this way. And there are many, many nice verses that explain this, such as from the Mukhanda Upanishad, Tadvigivartam Sagurum Eveva Gitschet Samitpani Strotrim Pramanishtam. To understand these things properly, one must humbly approach with firewood in hand a spiritual master who has learned in the Vedas and firmly devoted to the absolute truth. The firewood in hand might seem a little dated now. That refers to that the guru would be doing fire sacrifices, and you know, so the disciple would bring firewood, you know, for the spiritual master. The Srimad Bhagavatam also describes the necessity to accept a spiritual master. From 11.3.21, it says, therefore, any person who seriously desires real happiness must seek a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. So this process is not just something abstract. Well, what do we do? What does this mean? This is actually all described for us in the process of sadhana bhakti as given by some of our previous predecessor spiritual masters. The six Goswamis, the immediate disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wrote many books on the process of bhakti yoga, and one of the most important, of course, is Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Devotion, or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which was translated by Srila Prabhupada. Rupa Goswami mentions basic principles. He starts with 10 basic principles of spiritual life, and the first five of those all have to do with the spiritual master. Accept the shelter of the lotus bona fide spiritual master. 2, become initiated by the spiritual master, discharge service to him. 3, obey the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. 4, follow the footsteps of the great acharyas, the teachers, under the direction of the spiritual master. And 5, inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness. So Rupa Goswami doesn't say, do this activity and this activity and this activity. He says, first, go to a spiritual master. Learn about Krishna consciousness. Learn about the process of bhakti yoga, of sadhana bhakti, from the guru, from the spiritual master. Hear from him. That's the process. So, well, why do we need to do this? Why is it enough just to read and study the spiritual literatures on our own? Prabhupada has given us all these books. Why not just read the books? And of course, that's very good. One can learn so much. Everything is there in Srila Prabhupada's books. And of course, because he is the guru, he's also telling us how to apply these things. You know, in other words, that's why Prabhupada wrote so many purports. He could have just translated the verses, but then would we understand those verses? Would we understand how do we take 5,000-year-old knowledge and verses, how do we apply those today? So that's the role of the guru. He does this. Now, of course, many people today think they can understand on their own. They don't need a guru. They go by their own intuition, their own inner feelings. Well, whatever, what I think is right. Well, there's a certain limitation to that, isn't there? I mean, how much can we really understand of the highest truths of this universe just on our own sort of inner musings, or thoughts, or meditations, or intuition? If one wants to become a carpenter, you could read a book about carpentry, and you might be able to stumble through and learn some things. But a better way would be to apprentice with a carpenter and see from a master carpenter how to do it. You know, if you want to learn anything, you have to study. Many, many professions take years and years of study. And you study from professors or people who are already skilled, already knowledgeable. in those areas. So this principle is very obvious and very clear. We learn things from those who already know. That's the best way to learn. But how come in spiritual life, it suddenly is, I just am going to learn on my own? No one needs to tell me anything. I know it all. Well, good luck with that, if that's the way you choose to go. But Krishna has made it very clear that the best method is by approaching one who does know. We learn the truth by one who has realized the truth, from one who has seen the truth. That person can impart knowledge unto us. So how do we know who is the spiritual master? What are the qualifications? Well, that's again given to us by Krishna in the Vedic literatures. Interestingly, that in the 19th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, Shukadev Goswami is described as that he unhesitatingly answered questions and spoke the Bhagavatam. In other words, Shukadev Goswami is the speaker of the Bhagavatam. The fact that he answered questions, he eradicated the doubts, and he spoke the Bhagavatam, which is the beautiful story of the personality of Godhead, is what qualified him. So the spiritual master speaks the absolute truth as given by Krishna and is heard by their spiritual master. The guru doesn't necessarily show some mystic power or have some, you know, do magic tricks, doesn't read minds, they can, but that's not a qualification. He does not necessarily reveal your intimate relationships in Vrindavan with Krishna. This is not the qualification. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would often say that his only qualification for being a guru, for being a spiritual master, is that he did not change what he heard from his spiritual master, and he gave that, delivered that message intact to us. So he gave the message of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, coming from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the 11th canto, 3rd chapter, 21st verse, it says, therefore any person who seriously desires real happiness must seek a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of the bona fide guru is that he has realized the conclusions of the scripture by deliberation and is able to convince others of these conclusions. So that's the essential qualification. He's realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation, through study, through, and can convince others. In other words, that conviction and knowledge and understanding is great enough that he can explain that knowledge and convince others of that knowledge. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, should be understood to be bona fide spiritual masters. So it's clear that the spiritual master has to have spiritual knowledge that's given by his guru. He has to deeply understand the import of the Vedic literatures and understand the nature of God, the nature of this material world, the nature of our relationships. So he has that knowledge, but it's more than knowledge. The guru also has to practice that knowledge. He has to live a spiritually realized life. It can't just be theoretical or intellectual knowledge. So in the verse above, it says, leaving aside all material considerations. So what does that mean? That means that they are no longer bound by material desires, material drives, bound by those mundane modes of nature that so many of us are. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has stated, Upashama Shrayam Krodha Lobhyashvashi Bhutam. A bona fide spiritual master cannot be under the control of ordinary anger, greed, and lust. So there is a qualification to be a spiritual master, be free from anger, greed, and lust. In other words, those sort of mundane material motivations and pushings on us that we all experience. The guru has to be above those. You know. So, the guru must be both achar and prachar. In other words, achar means one's personal example, and prachar means one's words. So one has to be able to speak the Bhagavatam, but one also has to be the person Bhagavatam, embodies the qualities of the Bhagavatam in their own activities and behavior. Sanatana Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila, chapter 4, verse 102 and 3, was praising Haridas Thakur. And he said, some behave very well, but they don't preach the call to Krishna consciousness, whereas others preach, but they don't behave properly. Then he said, Acharya Prachara Namera Karahoy Dukarya Tumi Sarvaguru Tumi Jagatera Arya. You, Haridas Thakur, simultaneously perform duties in relation to the holy name by your personal behavior and by your preaching. Therefore, you are the spiritual master of the entire world, for you are the most advanced devotee in the world. So this was very high praise for Haridas Thakur, who is called Namacharya, who is the living example for us of the chanting of the holy name. So his example, of course, was chanting 300,000 names of the Lord every day, which I think is 192 rounds a day. And so very strong chanting. He was very strong in his preaching, able to convince so many people. So he had perfect behavior, perfect sadhana, and he also spoke strongly Krishna consciousness. So how does this apply to us? There are many spiritual masters, and we can connect through the parampara and be helped to deliver by many different types of devotees. So Krishna delivers the conditioned soul, the jivas, in the form of the spiritual master. Besides the initiating spiritual master, the Diksha Guru, there's also Shiksha Gurus, who are instructors. They are people who teach us, instruct us, and they are to be respected. And there's our Param Guru, the grandfather spiritual master, is very important, and we can get mercy from. And so there are many, many advanced devotees, and we can learn, and we can gain so much from all of them. But Srila Prabhupada had unique qualities. And yesterday we were glorifying Srila Prabhupada because Srila Prabhupada was not just any spiritual master. Being a spiritual master is a very wonderful, glorious position in itself. So it's not to diminish being a spiritual master. But he was more than that. Srila Prabhupada was the ISKCON founder acharya. He established this movement. Prabhupada was the one who came to the West, who brought Krishna consciousness to the Western world, and then back to the rest of the world, establishing 100 temples in so many countries, translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita's Vedic literatures into the English language so that we could all understand who Krishna was, what is bhakti, what is my relationship with Krishna. So he is also considered to be the preeminent Shiksha Guru for our entire movement for all time. Even though Srila Prabhupada disappeared from this physical plane, the earth planet, 1977, through his words, he is still with us at all times. So Prabhupada's position will be there for all time. In fact, for the next 10,000 years, Srila Prabhupada said that his books would be the law books for our ISKCON society. So we need to always be studying Srila Prabhupada's books for the wisdom that is there, for the application that is there, and just so that we can associate with this great, great soul through his words. So Prabhupada was uniquely qualified to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission all over the world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had many, many nice advanced disciples, and some of them tried. Some went to England, some tried a little bit to do some preaching, and they all failed. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj said, never mind, Abhaya will do. Abhaya, of course, was Prabhupada's name, early his given name. So many people recognize Prabhupada's accomplishments, and we can understand that his position is very, very unique in the history of the world. And it'll be recorded historically as a person who brought Krishna consciousness out of India to the rest of the world. So Prabhupada is also qualified as a pure devotee of Lord Krishna, one who never forgot Krishna for a moment, whose life was 100% dedicated to the service of Krishna and Guru. And those of us who are his disciples We experienced this with Srila Prabhupada, how his only desire was to serve. He didn't do any, there was no other activity. There was nothing material. There was nothing mundane in anything that he did. Everything he did, everything he said, was completely on the spiritual platform. Even if it was joking or friendly relationships, it was still all spiritual. It was all helping us to understand Krishna and develop our love and our service. And with Srila Prabhupada, we felt his unconditional love, his acceptance. We knew that this was one person who would not cheat us. This was a person with no material motivation, who was only there for us, only for our good, only to help us get out of this material world, to relieve our suffering and help us to understand spiritual life and to go back home, back to Godhead and be with Krishna again. So, of course, that leaves us with a great debt as well. Srila Prabhupada gave us so much. And it was expressed by many, many people yesterday. Many devotees spoke about how they felt that debt to Srila Prabhupada, what he has given us. We give very little in return. But still, we do our best. We try to serve Prabhupada. We try to continue on his mission and his movement. We know that Srila Prabhupada will be the center and the unifying force of this movement for years and years and generations to come. And in fact, if Srila Prabhupada's memory is lost, you can almost count on this movement will not stay together. There will be no ISKCON movement. There will be no continued ongoing process of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission going on successfully. Well, I'm not saying that there won't, because Lord Chaitanya said it's going to happen, so it's going to happen. But the way it will happen, I am convinced, is by us staying unified. But staying unified means staying behind Srila Prabhupada, following his instructions, reading his books, knowing that Srila Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru for all of us. So we all have different Shiksha Gurus, but Prabhupada is everyone's Shiksha Guru, the Shiksha Guru for the entire movement. And that means every devotee, whether you're a direct disciple of Srila Prabhupada or not, it doesn't matter. Even if you were born long after Srila Prabhupada disappeared from this planet, every devotee has a relationship with Prabhupada. How do you have a relationship with Prabhupada? Remember, in the spiritual world, it's not bound by time and space. That's a material conception. Srila Prabhupada is there in his words. And somebody was giving a really nice, I forget who it was. Someone was talking about how they had a realization of Srila Prabhupada being in his murti form. I remember that someone was talking about that, and someone had a dream about that. Anyway, it was a very, very nice offering. And I was thinking about that, how sometimes we forget that Srila Prabhupada is there in his murti. He's there in his words. He's there in his books. Now, does it always seem apparent to us? Not always, but that's our deficiency. Somebody once asked Srila Prabhupada, said, will you always be there for us? And Prabhupada said, if you want me to be. Well, they said, Prabhupada, are you always there in our heart? He said, if you want me to be. So it's our desire as well. So we can keep that connection, that relationship with Srila Prabhupada. And I know there are many young devotees, second generation devotees and other devotees who I know have very, very deep realizations about Prabhupada. Understandings of Prabhupada. I mean, I know young people, the next generation, who've had dreams of Srila Prabhupada more than I have. I said, I'm a disciple. How come I don't have dreams like that anyway? So it's like it's all up to people's individual realization, their individual desires. But we can all be connected with Prabhupada, all understand his greatness, all stay connected through his family and Prabhupada's movement. So the next generation links to Srila Prabhupada and the entire disciplic succession. Many people take a spiritual master, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, so they're linked right directly with Srila Prabhupada. You know, that it's that unbroken link of spiritual masters coming from Prabhupada. So we want to be part of Prabhupada's family, and we want to understand not sentimentally, but philosophically, the role of the spiritual master, why we accept the spiritual master, what the spiritual master's qualifications are. And once we understand that, and as we learn about Srila Prabhupada, it becomes more and more apparent that Srila Prabhupada is really one of the greatest acharyas to ever grace this planet. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, might be a few minutes. Any thoughts or questions or comments? Yes. Is there a microphone? Maybe not. Well, while we're waiting, you have to speak loudly.
So you were talking about learning through hearing, and I've heard that when you are less intelligent, you learn through experience. Mm. You're stubborn, you don't actually
Yes. Actually, Prabhupada said there are three classes of intelligence. The first class intelligence learns through hearing. Second class has to learn through experience. And the third class experiences and still doesn't learn. Right? So, yeah. And we certainly are less intelligent in Kali Yuga. Fortunately, Prabhupada said once that he's given us our intelligence. And that intelligence is revived by the process of bhakti. By the process of devotional service, and particularly chanting Hare Krishna, the intelligence actually becomes, you know, more uncovered, becomes more clear, becomes more sharp. So that intelligence will come to us. Just like, I understand, if we might just open a book, it might not understand very well, but as we kind of take to devotional service, and we're hearing more, and we're chanting, it becomes more clear, right? And one gains more and more realization. So that's kind of the way it works. Somehow or another, we are fortunate that Krishna and Prabhupada give us intelligence. Yes? Mm-hmm.
But also, I feel like Srila Prabhupada is here. I don't have a direct, I cannot talk to him. Or maybe I can talk, but we can see that people who serve Srila Prabhupada, they still get his mercy. And
yeah.
There should be some mystical process, or how does it work?
You did bring up a very good point. And that's even though we have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada and we can speak with Prabhupada and pray to Prabhupada and get direction, but your point is also good. That's why we take a living guru. In other words, we need someone who's actually physically present often that we can talk to, that we can serve directly, that can give us instruction. So that's also needed. Yeah. Yes.
So how does it work?
Well, you're talking about a kind of a spiritual process, which is somewhat mystical, and so sort of say, how does it work? Yeah, because it's not mechanical, is it? It's not like I read this book, and therefore I now have knowledge. It's not exactly like that. I need to read the book, but it's also because the spiritual master is imparting the knowledge. Krishna is revealing within my heart, right? In other words, it's a process of both that we do particular efforts, we do particular activities of bhakti, right? Of the nine processes of bhakti, hearing, chanting, serving in so many ways. And in those ways, we please the Guru, and Krishna, and then that knowledge is imparted and that spiritual advancement is imparted, and that, taking away the impurities, the purification process comes about. So it is hard to understand. I don't claim to have the answer to exactly how does it happen, but it does happen on that spiritual platform. In other words, the heart is becoming spiritualized. So in other words, you're actually being transformed from material to spiritual. And Prabhupada gives examples, familiar examples, you know, like the iron rod. The iron rod, you put it in the fire, and it gets hotter and hotter. You take it out, it's glowing. So it's now fire. It's still a steel rod, but it's acting as fire. So in the same way, you know, when we engage material things, including our body, our mind, our words, in Krishna's service, they become spiritualized. They take on spiritual qualities. And one of the spiritual qualities, of course, is full knowledge, right? The spirit soul is naturally full of satchitananda. Chit is knowledge. So as one becomes more and more in one's spiritual position, naturally that inherent knowledge revives. So like Prabhupada explained once, it's not an artificial process, it's a process of bringing out that inherent knowledge and understanding of who we really are. In other words, our Sanatana Dharma, the constitutional position of the living entity as pure jiva, is becoming uncovered and revived. I think that's what's happening. And so therefore, it's that spiritual quality comes out more and more as the more we advance in Krishna consciousness, and knowledge is one of those component parts. That was probably more confusing than helpful. Sorry. I don't know. Okay? Anyway, any further discussion on that?
Yes.
Ron Govinda, you can help us with this. Thank you. Very nice. Okay, thank you all so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.